welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, July 31st, 2023. The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan says the Kiir administration should prevent human trafficking in the country.
Addressing the issue of trafficking in persons in South Sudan is an imperative for upholding global responsibilities and safeguarding human rights. Those responsible for trafficking in persons and related crimes must be held accountable.
And some South Sudanese analysts say there is no freedom of assembly in South Sudan.
We need to see into that for us to be able to say whether there is a good political ground for all the political parties to sell out their parties in good spirit.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Troika countries of the United States, United Kingdom, and Norway are calling on South Sudan government to end human trafficking. A police spokesperson says security agencies are stepping up efforts to end the vice in the country. Dengai Deng has details for VOA from Bor.
Sunday was World Day Against Trafficking in Person. The Troika countries, which include Norway, the United Kingdom and the United States, say South Sudan's leaders should take steps to eradicate the human trafficking in the country. Speaking on behalf of the Troika, Michael J. Adler, the U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, said cases of trafficking in person in South Sudan include abductions of women and children, the recruitment and use of child soldiers, child marriage, and the trafficking of commercial sex workers.
July 30th is World Day Against Trafficking in Persons, and we note with grave concern instances of trafficking that continue to occur in South Sudan, including those involving sexual and gender-based violence.
Ambassador Adler urges the transitional government of national unity to take steps to eradicate human trafficking and meet the minimum standards of prevention and accountability in accordance with international laws.
Addressing the issue of trafficking in persons in South Sudan is an imperative for upholding global responsibilities and safeguarding human rights. Those responsible for trafficking in persons and related crimes must be held accountable.
In 2020, South Sudan's government, together with the International Organization for Migration, or IOM, established a technical task force to counter trafficking in persons and smuggling of migrants. Brigadier General James Doug Carlo is the deputy spokesperson of the South Sudan National Police Service. Carlo says the task force has made some progress by creating awareness on trafficking in persons, as well as plans for the adoption of a comprehensive migration policy.
We are being assisted by our donors, stakeholders, headed by UNMI, UNGP, UN Women, UIPA, and other stakeholders. And the rate of sexual gender-based violence coming to the data is not like last year. Although we have the conflict related to gender-based violence to the area, which are being in trouble, where there has been community misunderstanding.
General Carlos says despite the efforts to improve the situation, South Sudan's challenge is eradicating trafficking in persons, because the country lacks surveillance detectors to monitor its borders. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
Still on South Sudan, some South Sudanese political analysts say President Salva Kiir should open civic space so that politicians can start campaigning for the elections coming next year. In his Matters Day televised address on Sunday, President Kiir repeated his commitment to hold elections in 2024. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
In his Matters Day televised message to the nation on Sunday, President Salva Kiir reminded South Sudanese to prepare for elections next year. The president said, quote, "We must work to exit from a perpetual transitional government status, and elections are the only way out of this. This is why I am urging all the political forces in the country to focus on using the current period provided by the roadmap to give our citizens the power to choose their leaders democratically next year, end of quote. Abraham Kwole Nyon, a professor of political science at the University of Juba, has a different opinion on President Kiir's call for elections. Nyon says all indicators show that the country is not prepared to conduct elections. He says President Kiir's SPLM party is holding political rallies in preparations for the elections, while other parties are not allowed to campaign.
We need to see into that for us to be able to say whether there is a good political ground for all the political parties to exercise, to sell out their parties in good spirit is still not the issue. Unless we see into it that all the political parties are given freedom of assembly, they are given freedom to mobilize voters, they are also given freedom to be able also to sell the agenda of their parties.
Nyon says the focus should be on opening the civic space and allowing political parties to prepare for the elections.
The revitalized peace agreement has given a very good roadmap that could lead to the election. And that roadmap, if the leaders join themselves and agree on those milestones and work together as a team, despite all the obstacles that are available ahead of them, then the chances of us having election are extremely very high.
Boboya James, a policy analyst at the Juba-based Institute of Social Policy and Research, agrees with Nyon. He says the environment in South Sudan is not favorable for conducting elections. James urges the parties to implement key legal provisions in the country's roadmap to enable the conduct of the elections.
There's a lot that needs to be done, and those issues that are not being resolved create a lot of anxieties and worries in many, many South Sudanese, because they don't believe that there will be elections that happen. Because if these people cannot be able to implement the peace agreement, how can they be able to run elections?
Last week, the SPLM-IO, a signatory of the 2018 peace agreement, called on the transitional government of national unity to implement the security arrangements, conduct a census, draft a permanent constitution, and improve transitional justice mechanisms to encourage the participation of the country's political leaders in the upcoming elections. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still in Juba, South Sudanese marked the Martyrs' Day on July 30th. The day is dedicated to remembering South Sudanese who died in the struggle for independence, including the country's founding father, late John Garang Di Mabior, who was killed in an helicopter crash on the 30th of July 2005. In a statement to mark the day, U.S. ambassador to South Sudan says the country's leaders must meet their commitment for creating stability in the country. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
In an audio statement shared with the media yesterday, the United States Embassy in Juba said those who died fighting for the freedom of South Sudan can only feel honored when the country's leaders demonstrate a commitment to peace. U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan Michael J. Adela says Martyrs' Day is an occasion to reflect on the destiny of South Sudan.
As we honor the memory of all those who sacrificed their lives for the South Sudanese people, we look to those in positions of power and influence in this country to accelerate efforts to meet peace commitments so that the South Sudanese people can achieve the better future they deserve. That is the best way, indeed the only way, to properly honor those who are remembered on Martyrs' Day.
South Sudanese leaders are racing against time to implement the provisions of the 2018 peace agreement, which provides for elections at the end of the extended transitional period in December 2024. Ambassador Adela says the United States was part of the journey of the South Sudanese to achieve their destiny during the 21 years of fighting with the Sudan government.
The United States supported the people of South Sudan in this effort, an effort based on foundational values, including a commitment to human rights, peace, democracy, and the ability of people to have a government that is responsive to their needs.
Deng Dao Ding, South Sudan's acting foreign affairs minister, says the transitional government of national unity will implement the outstanding provisions of the 2018 peace agreement within the remaining 17 months of the roadmap.
17 months are very little time, but are also very huge time to undertake any activity that need to be done. There is a political will for the political parties into the agreement to implement all these things. So I just want to reassure you that all those our friends or partners that are talking of encouraging us, this is a well-received message. We will always be moving towards aspiration of our people.
Despite some shortcomings in the implementation of the peace agreement, Deng, who lost one of his legs during the struggle for independence, says the country's leaders have achieved some things to show honor to the 2.5 million martyrs who died for the freedom of the South Sudanese people.
We have continued to keep South Sudan as a united country, and this is what they have fought for. We have continued to build infrastructure, the road, for the first time in this country. It has never seen tarmac, which we have done. We have 2.5 million school-going children across South Sudan. We have 800,000 health facilities across South Sudan, which was not there.
Ambassador Adela says, as South Sudanese remember those who lost their lives fighting for the independence of South Sudan, the United States Embassy in Juba is also remembering aid workers, including an American, who were killed in Juba while delivering humanitarian assistance to South Sudanese. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some South Sudanese living in Nairobi say they fear for their lives. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some South Sudanese who have cars with South Sudan registration say they are afraid of driving in different parts of Kenya due to fear of reprisal attacks following an alleged involvement of a South Sudanese registered vehicle in a raid at the home of the son of former Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta. The South Sudanese ambassador to Kenya says the matter is being handled. For VOA News, Lucy Pony reports from Nairobi.
On July 21st, Kenyan media reported that police officers raided the residence of former Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta's eldest son, Jomo Kenyatta, in Karen. Former President Uhuru told the press in Nairobi the officers were using a vehicle with South Sudanese number plates and had wanted to forcefully enter the premises of his son. Video footage of the raid was circulated, clearly showing a black Subaru with a number plate SSD940V, allegedly used by the police officers in the raid. Jacob Bull, a South Sudanese activist and resident of Nairobi, says the incident jeopardizes relations between the two nations and urged the South Sudanese embassy in Kenya to thoroughly investigate the matter. He adds that although there have been no reported incidents of aggression towards South Sudanese who drive South Sudanese registered vehicles in Kenya, the incident created fear in him.
When the incident happened, the first thing that came to my mind was, how is this going to be felt like for the Kenyan citizens, especially in areas that are more of slum-like places? If somebody can pass by with an SSD number plate, could it be like a threat to people? Like, you know, they would see it as being used by a security operative. It put me in a bit of fear.
Professor Chacha Nyaigoti Chacha teaches diplomacy and international relations at the University of Nairobi. He says the use of vehicles with foreign registration by security operatives is an unfortunate incident and could potentially affect relations between the two neighborly nations.
Diplomatically, that's a bad case. I hope that those number plates were fake, because if they were genuinely South Sudanese number plates, one would put the question mark in terms of how a vehicle owned by perhaps somebody in South Sudan manages to come to Kenya and it is used aggressively to undermine the tranquility of citizens of this country. I, however, think that anybody can use a number plate of any country on a car, especially if the intentions are not genuine intentions.
Chacha says the incident has created suspicion between Kenyans and South Sudanese driving South Sudanese registered vehicles in the country.
I find a vehicle with that number being driven near my house. I get worried, and if that number is genuinely owned by a South Sudanese who is driving that car, then of course first I'll have suspicions against that person. So it means the lives of the genuine South Sudanese people who are driving genuinely registered vehicles of South Sudan, driving in Kenya, they are also endangered in terms of how they are viewed by the citizens of Kenya.
Chacha says if the matter is handled properly, it may not affect the diplomatic relations between the two nations, and South Sudanese living in Kenya can go about their lives without fear. He says the two nations have advanced systems to investigate the incident. South Sudan's ambassador to Kenya, Chol Mawuta Jongo, declined to comment, saying the matter is under inquiry. He promised to provide details once police investigations are completed. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pone in Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we move to Sudan, where one intelligence assessment says Sudan's Rapid Support Forces, RSF paramilitary, has the resources to sustain its war against Sudanese army for years. The fighting in Sudan has gone for more than 3 months, with an estimated 3,000 killed and more than 3 million displaced. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
The conflict's been the most intense in the capital, Khartoum, and in the western Darfur region. 20 years ago, many current Rapid Support Force fighters, including leader Mohamed Hemeti Dagalo, were members of Arab militias known as the Janjaweed, which terrorized Darfur. Their task, says former United States intelligence analyst Cameron Hudson, was to wipe out Sudanese of African ethnicity for then-ruler Omar al-Bashir.
They became responsible for what we would consider to be the most kind of gruesome aspects of the killing in Darfur. Because they were on the ground, because they were coming in on horseback and camelback, they were carrying out the rapes. They were carrying out the person-to-person killing, the destroying of villages and of water points, the destruction of livestock, the looting, all of these kind of very personal crimes.
Hudson was speaking during a recent Atlantic Council webinar. The International Criminal Court indicted al-Bashir and others for genocide in Darfur, but they haven't been prosecuted. Al-Bashir was overthrown in 2019 and remains in the custody of the Sudanese army. Hudson says with so many conflicts unresolved in Sudan, it's fertile ground for the present fighting to expand into a full-blown civil war and possibly a regional war.
As this fighting has gone on, we have seen new factions emerge. Arab tribes from Darfur, we're seeing opposition groups from the Nuba Mountains begin to take opportunities available to them to strike. This is a conflict that affects every corner of the country. It affects every tribe, group, ethnicity, socioeconomic class of the country, and every major city throughout the country. It is really a far more devastating and comprehensive conflict than anything that we've really witnessed in Sudan's modern history.
The RSF fought as mercenaries in Libya and Yemen, building a cash reserve that allowed it to go on mass recruitment drives. Hudson says it's getting the upper hand in Khartoum because regular reinforcements are coming in from Darfur.
It's really, I think, the appeal of the Rapid Support Forces right now and its leader, General Dagalo Hemeti. This idea that for so long these peripheral areas have been marginalized and that they are going to bring this violence that has always plagued the peripheral communities. They're going to bring it to the capital. They're going to bring it to the elites of the country, and they are going to make them feel some measure of what these other communities have been feeling for decades now.
VOA tried repeatedly to get reaction from the RSF to Hudson's comments, but their spokesman never responded. Several attempts by Saudi Arabia, the United States, the African Union, and other parties to negotiate lasting ceasefires in Sudan have failed, and talks have been stalled for weeks. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
English to Africa service will celebrate its 60th anniversary on the 4th of August. Help us to celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. Send a voice message or text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. Tell us what is your favorite program. Or let us know about a particular story that connected with you. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa. Tell us what stories you think we should cover or how can we improve. Again, that number is +1 202 258 3076. And thanks for 60 years of support. And here are some testimonies from our listeners in South Sudan.
My name is Alvino Kerr from Rombek. I would like to recognize the celebration day of 60th anniversary of VOA International. I really like South Sudan in Focus because when I come back from work, I relax at home. And not only me, all the South Sudanese who are employees, they always settle and listen to Voice of America in Focus. All the news are important at all aspects. We have to begin with the social news, political news, and economics news, which are concerning development in South Sudan. And also, we should not forget human rights news. As one of the youth in South Sudan, I always like to listen to the news concerning human rights because human abuses and respect for human life need to be preached out to those that are not interested to respect the right of people. We are all equal at life. No one is regarded to be useless in life. Whether you are young, elderly, middle age, all of us, we are equal. We have equal rights, and all our rights need to be respected in the law and also in a political will. We need also to consider our political news such that we analyze the nature of our government and how best we can transform our government as citizens of South Sudan, because we believe that South Sudan as a new nation will soon become the best country if all of us politically agree and look at how best we would change from this state to another state.
According to me, the programs which I like in VOA, I like Deep Break Africa, South Sudan in Focus, because South Sudan in Focus gives us the information not only in South Sudan, though it is called South Sudan in Focus, but even in some parts of Africa, like now what is going on in Sudan, which helps us to get updated because we have some of our relatives, colleagues who were there in Sudan. So it gives us more update and to know how they are, how they are living, and maybe if there's also some help which we can provide to them. For Deep Break Africa, it opens our day, also giving us the same information in the morning, so we wake up when we are updated. During the day, we are updated. We know what is going on in other parts of Africa. That's what I like. Report mostly on Sudan, because this is what is now going on, because there's a lot of crisis. We like that news to be actually being brought more. Though even in South Sudan, we have some crisis, but we are getting used to them. We need corruption news. We need even political news. Since South Sudan is going for elections, so we need them to cover more, whether to see whether we are ready for elections or not. Or there will be some changes because the world is full of changes. So we don't need to be in one place. If we're 2023, going to 2024, there should be some kind of change politically, maybe even the weather and maybe the people.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday, July 31st. When I leave you with Sultan Clinton and the song Jamila. We've been listening to Sultan Clinton and the song Jamila. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Adrius Regis, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On July 17th, Russia suspended its participation in the Black Sea Grain Initiative, an agreement between Ukraine and Russia brokered by Turkey and the United States that allowed ships to enter and leave Ukrainian ports without being attacked. This as millions of people around the world face unprecedented food insecurity, some tipping into famine. The human consequences of a decision to deny food to the world's most vulnerable are devastating, said USAID Administrator Samantha Power.
Let us be clear about what the Black Sea Grain Initiative achieved. Two-thirds of the wheat that was exported via that initiative went to developing countries. 55% of the commodities exported overall through the Black Sea Grain Initiative went to lower income countries. So in addition to the Ukrainian farmers who will pay a price, it is people all around the world who are going to be worse off because of this reckless decision.
The fact is that the Black Sea Grain Initiative should not have been necessary in the first place. The only reason it became necessary is because Russia invaded Ukraine and then decided to blockade the ports and prevent Ukraine from sending grain around the world, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The result of Russia's action today, weaponizing food, using it as a tool, as a weapon in its war against Ukraine, will be to make food harder to come by in places that desperately need it.
The bottom line is it's unconscionable. It should not happen. This should be restored as quickly as possible. And I hope that every country is watching this very closely. They will see that Russia is responsible for denying food to people who desperately need it around the world, and to contribute to rising prices at a time when many countries continue to experience very difficult inflation.
We urge the government of Russia to immediately reverse its decision, said National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communications, John Kirby.
The United States has and we will continue to work with other countries to enable both Russian and Ukrainian grain to reach the rest of the world, including by ensuring that our sanctions do not target, contrary to Russian propaganda, they do not target Russian food or fertilizer.
The United States, said Mr. Kirby, will continue to support Ukraine's efforts to get that grain to markets that desperately need it, even if that's through other routes.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.